Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. There are a lot of barriers to entry for minorities seeking a medical marijuana business license. The state of Missouri is preparing to start taking applications on Saturday, August 3rd. St. Louis Public Radio's Corinne Ruff spoke with an African-American ownership group hoping to get at least one of the nearly 350 licenses the state will grant.
So we have the dispensary that will be separated from the broader...
Cheryl Watkins-Moore is showing off a space that she hopes will become the flagship dispensary of Real Cannabis Co. Right now, the empty building in the Del Mar Loop is still undergoing renovations, but she can already picture it.
These are like small offices, but we envision having comfortable seating. People can come in, be able to browse retail as well as get a coffee. Once your number is called or whatever, it's very discreet.
Watkins-Moore is the chief strategy and marketing officer of the company, which is seeking to be one of the first recipients of a medical marijuana business license in St. Louis. If that happens, the company would become one of a small number of African-American-owned and operated marijuana businesses in the country. Nationally, the demographic makes up just 4% of the industry. Watkins-Moore says there are a lot of barriers to entry for people of color, from a lack of generational wealth and connections to past history with what's been an illegal drug.
Our community, especially African-American communities, have been decimated through the war on drugs, right? And a lot of folks who were involved in the illicit form of marijuana sales have now been shut out of this industry in many ways.
Watkins-Moore isn't talking about her own experience. She's also a successful biologist and entrepreneur. But she says she decided to join Real Cannabis because she has the connections to help foster its larger mission around building community. That's what convinced St. Louis area resident Justin Gage to get on board, too. The former NFL player for the Bears is the chief relationships officer. He says many people of color have a negative association with marijuana. Gage thinks that by putting dispensaries in communities, they will create jobs and maybe entrepreneurs.
Take a person and help them grow, help them learn a business, help them learn a trade so that they can pass it on to the next person and grow our community that way.
But Real Cannabis has to get a license from the state first. Unlike states like Massachusetts, Missouri doesn't have a social equity program, which aims to boost participation for minority-owned businesses. Linda Fraker, who directs medical marijuana regulation for the state of Missouri, says race, ethnicity, and gender won't be a consideration at all.
This will all be done in a blind fashion, so names will be redacted, and it'll be done by a third-party company and not us. So it'll be very transparent and above board.
While Missouri's program won't give special consideration to minority-owned businesses, Fraker says the application process will consider how businesses approach diversity. But the biggest barrier to entry for people of color comes even before the application process, finding money to get started. Real Cannabis founder and CEO Derek Mays says he's made a lot of connections as a lawyer, so raising private capital wasn't as big of a problem as he thought it would be. So far, the company has raised over $1 million, and they also found a bank willing to work with them, which makes a big difference.
When you tell an investor that you're in this space and that you're banked, that gives you a level of credibility that a lot of other organizations just don't have. So it enabled us to go out and raise more money.
Most minority-owned businesses don't have the connections or the capital that Mays and his team have. But advocacy organizations like Minorities for Marijuana are trying to bridge the gap. In April, the nationwide group held its first ever boot camp in St. Louis. Roz McCarthy is the group's founder. She says the goal of the four-week program was to help more minorities think through their business plan and meet with investors. That way, she says, they'd have a better shot at getting a license.
It's not easy. If we look at a social equity that's been harmed by the war on drugs, now to say we want you to transfer whatever skill set you have, but now you got to be able to compete in this highly regulated market and be successful.
Some participants ultimately dropped out of the educational program, but McCarthy says she's encouraged that over 30 people are still planning to apply for a license. By the end of the year, they'll find out if they're going to be a part of the first wave of medical marijuana businesses in Missouri. I'm Corinne Ruff, St. Louis Public Radio.
Black brother of hell.
Now at 6, a disturbing discovery at Miami International Airport. Tonight, the offensive display lands two TSA employees in trouble. Tonight, they are both off the job.
Off the job and on administrative leave, in fact. CBS 4's Ted Scouten is live at MIA with the story. Ted.
Jim and Rudabe, reprehensible and shocking. Those are two of the words used by TSA to describe this hanging noose that was found tonight. Two employees are suspended as this investigation moves forward.
It's 2019 and you wouldn't expect like people to still express like that type of anger or anything like that. Like, grow up.
Passengers stunned to hear reports of a noose hanging from a ceiling with two stuffed monkeys attached to it. It was found in a non-public baggage area of Miami International Airport.
That's pretty racist. That's pretty racist. There's no other way to say it.
It's very offensive. Why would you do that? What do you need to have it up there for?
Sources say it was found by a TSA employee the weekend before last. TSA launched an immediate investigation into what it called an offensive display. They released a statement saying, in part, TSA does not tolerate racist or offensive behavior, and those found responsible will be held accountable for their actions. Two TSA officers have been placed on administrative leave while the investigation is ongoing.
Especially the history with black people and the whole monkey thing, it just wasn't something you should have put up.
That's very concerning. It's disgusting behavior, and because you mentioned it's non-public, would assume it would be someone actually working for the TSA. It's very disappointing.
You're starting to see people feel emboldened or empowered to use, symbols of hate.
Former State Senator Dwight Bullard is with the South Dade branch of the NAACP. He said he's seeing more instances of racism with the current climate in the U.S. He also notes the hate-filled symbolism of the news.
What a lot of people don't appreciate is that Florida was the state in the South where you could most likely be lynched during the era of Jim Crow in this country.
The Anti-Defamation League weighing in too, pleased to see that the TSA is taking swift action.
The display of a noose in the workplace, whether it's public or private, is absolutely repugnant.
Both the airport and Miami-Dade County put out statements saying they do not condone the racist and offensive behavior. Meanwhile, both of them are glad that TSA launched an investigation so quickly. Live at the airport, Ted Scout, CBS 4 News.
Well, she say no one is mistreating her. Racism is about mistreatment. Now, is she saying that she perceives she is being mistreated, but she can't put it into words or what? Mistreatment is mistreatment. Most people, babies, four-year-olds, know when you can perceive when some mistreatment is going on. So if there's no mistreatment, then there's no mistreatment on that job. All right? Now, racism runs the entire world, but within the context, if people call you on a job and give you the job, and they say you do this and you do that, and you'll be rewarded, you'll be compensated, then, and they don't do anything to interfere with you on the job or take something from you that you're entitled to, then where is the mistreatment? I mean, if you are just uncomfortable, well, that's nothing you can accuse anybody else of. You're just uncomfortable. on the job, and you should ask yourself why you are uncomfortable. You can't ask anybody else that, because if you say there's no mistreatment and no one is taking anything away from you or sealing you off from anything that you think you're entitled to, then you have a situation where you're not being mistreated in that particular situation. Now, overall, worldwide, when you consider the existence of racism, you're mistreated from the day that you were born if you're non-white, because you're born in a prison system called the system of white supremacy. That's a given. But within the rules and regulations that they give in that prison, and you're assigned to a certain job in the prison, and they say that, well, now, what constitutes mistreatment for anybody, white or non-white, on this job would be this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if none of those things are happening to you, then why are you uneasy? I mean, just do your job, and that's it. Collect your paycheck. I guess that's what you came there for. Now, if you came there for someone to like you, and sometimes people do. Sometimes people like to socialize, they call it, on the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you weren't hired on the job unless you were hired on the job for socializing. If that's not a part of the job description, you must socialize. And then somebody needs to describe what they mean by socialize. Do you get on the top of the desk and do a hula dance or what? What do they mean by socializing? There are some jobs where they say you must be able to interact with people in a relaxed or laid-back manner, some type of vague language like that. That needs to be nailed down to specifics. What do they want you to do? Do they want you to play a banjo or what? All right? And if that's not in your job description and all like that, just go to the job, say good morning to people, good evening, do your job, and leave. You came there primarily to get a paycheck. That's most jobs. That's what you're there for, to do the job and get compensated for doing the job that you're assigned to do. Now, the socialization, sometimes people, you know, say, and I've heard black people say that, well, nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody wants to laugh and talk to me. I like to laugh and talk. Well, if that's not in the job description, then you really can't ask for that as a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Laughing and talking.
Context of white supremacy. That is amazing. Absolutely amazing. at least to me, this is the cows, workplace racism, neutralizing workplace racism. Neely Fuller Jr. there at the end. ProduceJustice.com, code book, word guide, both. ProduceJustice.com. Most of the time, I think, for workplace racism, victims of white supremacy that have participated in the program and talked about some of their concerns in the workplace, most of the time, it tends to be the other way, that people on their job are upset that they don't want to laugh and joke. Generally, we don't have too many times. I can think of maybe one or two where someone has said, you know, they didn't get invited out to lunch. You know, people didn't want to laugh and joke with them. A few here or there. But generally speaking, it's way the other direction, that, you know, I'm here to work. I'm here to be sick, doing exactly what Mr. Fuller said. What does my job entail? Okay. Telling jokes is not in my job. Okay. Not here to tell jokes. Let's be serious and get our work done. I'm going to see if I can get a raise or two while I'm here. And it's, hey, you don't want to laugh and, you know, tell a few jokes? You don't want to giggle with us? What's the problem? Seeming like you're not a team player. Just, that is amazing. If I am in error, let me know. And again, if we have any folks where that is more your experience, where you feel like, hey, you know, people on my job, they are isolating me. They don't invite me out to lunch. They don't, you know, talk to me. They don't socialize with me. They don't share any jokes with me. And that is a problem. I would like to be included. If that is your experience, make sure you speak up. As I said, we have had some people who said that that's their, you know, experience and they think that's racism. Ed Dwight, who they're talking about right now with the anniversary of the moon landing, and he was in the space program. He didn't go into space, as they call it. But he did experience racism, white supremacy in the training program. And that was one form. He said that they would isolate him. They wouldn't laugh and joke with him. They wouldn't socialize with him. They wouldn't invite him out to, you know, after hours and that sort of thing, happy hour and all that stuff. Sobriety would be best. But if that's your experience, let us know. That is one form of racism, white supremacy. I'm just noting my general conclusion, my general sense of things is it's the other way around. Anywho. This, again, is Neutralizing Workplace Racism. If you have your own experience, as I generally say at the beginning, if you have figured out, hey, this is what to do, these are things that work. I don't have nooses in my workstation. I don't have monkeys in my workstation. I don't have to worry about getting any sort of license, accreditation. I don't have to sweat any of that. I'm good anytime. If an exam I pass, flying colors, all of my performance evaluations are sparkling. I get my raises on time. They don't move my work schedule around to any old wacky hour of the day or night. No way. That doesn't happen to me ever. And I'm going to be in this spot until I'm ready to retire. If that's, you know, 2040, 2050, whenever I feel like it. If you are in that position, bravo. Invest in the cows, racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. You can also use cash.app/$thecows. But that is spectacular. If you are in that wonderful position, in addition to investing in the program, please call in. That would be another form of an investment, to call in and tell us, how did you do that? Share. Give us as much detail as possible so that we can try and do some copycatting of that. And I won't call it success, but at least have a little less trouble, substantially less trouble, a little more enjoyment in the workplace. We would all like that. Certainly, if you are having any difficulties, problems on the job, please dial in. Give us a thought, or rather, dial in, and we will try as best we can to offer constructive, counter-racist suggestions to help you solve problems without creating new problems. That is always the metric, solving problems without creating new problems. And certainly you can give us an update. That is one thing that I will say. Please give us an update. If you do share, you call in, you have a problem or something, and you're thinking about, you know, potential suggestions or how you should deal with the situation, let us know, because we do not want to be talking crazy, giving out nonsense suggestions or thoughts about how to process what's happening to you in a workplace setting. Let us know if it, you know, does not work out as well or just adds to the confusion, causes more problems. That still is good to know. We are all still learning and trying to improve with regards to understanding racism, white supremacy. If it works out well, that's good to know. Also, we know some strategies that seem like they might be effective, so we can continue to suggest those. So I think many of us always appreciate the updates. If you have problems or concerns with dialing in, you want to maintain some anonymity or just aren't able to phone in, you can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. I will share your commentary if it's your own situation or if you have comments on what's being discussed. You can email and I can read it anonymously on the broadcast. Before I get to the emails, I have a written report as well. And I think the last week or maybe 2 weeks, we were dealing with educators and their counter-racist code for the classroom, which was great. We have a lot of cows educators in the listening audience. Bravo. As I said last week, seems like something could be done with that. The question for this week, I'm ashamed that I hadn't brought this up sooner. I am not a female. That's what motivated this question. Have folks constructed specifically a counter-racist code for expecting, as they call it, being pregnant while on the job? Extremely important. We spent all this time talking about how non-white females in the workplace who are pregnant, how racism is practiced against them, and they, you know, are still given these really grueling jobs or not given sufficient time off and that sort of thing, are still stressed greatly at this sensitive time. But having a code, what is your code for I am pregnant? Even if you are a male, you have a partner who is pregnant. You're an expecting father. How does that change? Or does it? Maybe even start there. Some folks, although I cannot imagine if you are a female and you are working, I cannot imagine how becoming pregnant, that would have to change your workplace counter-racist code. Maybe if you're a male, maybe things stay the same. But I would think if you're a female, your counter-racist code would have to change. It would have to be at least one or two things would have to be a little bit different. I would think even just one, the touching. That's something that we talked about. Again, I'm not a female, so some of this was news to me, prenatal yoga teacher training. But there were a lot of females who talked about unwanted touching in the form of total strangers, or even sometimes coworkers, sometimes quote-unquote friends, who felt like they had total license to come up and grab on your stomach, and oh my gosh, and that little fella or that little girl, and all of that. It's like, whoa, maybe I'm just not interested in being touched today, or whoa, I don't know you, or whoa, we're still in the workplace, and it's still back up off me, no touching. That is at least one, because I think a lot of, I'm not a female. I just hadn't processed that before about, oh yeah, I probably would be really annoyed with people just thinking they could come up and, you know, and to be at such a sensitive time in your life that just people feel like people can just come up and molest you whenever they feel like it because, oh, you're pregnant and that's so great. So it would be lots of things to consider. Like, now we talk all the time on the program about, you know, boundaries. What do you share? What do you not share? Oh, man. They can waste a half hour, and I have seen this in a variety of job settings, at the water cooler, the refrigerator, the smoke session, maybe not so much at the smoke session anymore, but in a variety of places around the office where they can waste a good 30 minutes if somebody is pregnant, and the baby shower and pictures and what do you, oh man, they can, but questions, it will be questions, questions. Questions. How much do you share? Do you tell them the due date? Do you tell them if, you know, well, I'm going to do a natural childbirth? Is that information that you want to share? How much do you share? Because wow, you thought you were asked a whole lot of questions before. You come in there and start showing a little bit and think white people aren't going to have 8 billion questions for you. That's why I said, like, wow, I'm a little bit ashamed that I hadn't thought to bring that up before. So, attempted counter-racist parents. If you were pregnant while on the job, how did that change your counter-racist code? If you were not codified, if you did not, you know, have an understanding of racism, white supremacy, and you know, counter-racist concepts at that time, reflecting on that experience, what are some of the things that you did that you would do differently now that you do have an understanding of racism, white supremacy? Like, oh yeah, if I was pregnant this time around, this is what I would do on the job. This is what I would not do. This is what I would say. This is what I would not say. These are details that I would not share, all of that. Because, I mean, that is a lot to have to consider for the work, just the questions alone. The questions, the touching, being pregnant requires a lot of changes. So Yeah, I would definitely be interested. As I said, males and females. If I'm in error and it didn't change things at all for you in the workplace, well, then shame on me. But I can't imagine that being the case. So if we have folks, if you went through that and, you know, can share with us how it adjusted your code, maybe even if it permanently adjusted your code to being a parent, even after the pregnancy, how did it adjust your code? The number 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I am very eager in hearing feedback on that one. All righty. One report I will share, and then we will get to the phone lines. I can do a twofer here. So support Black journalists. Whoopee. This report was written by Sherry Borden-Collie, Black female journalist with CBC Canada. Always think it's important to emphasize we are not talking about a local or national problem. White supremacy racism is global throughout the known universe. Ed White was in the so-called space program trying to get off the planet and still encountering racism the whole time. But I do think it's important to keep that in mind. This is a global problem, and that workplace racism also a global problem. This report was in the CBC. The DND has been ordered to pay $25,000 for pure and simple racial prejudice. They still don't say racism, so you can see that pattern even across the border. I'm not going to read the whole report, but just try to pick out some of the major points. A federal panel has awarded a Black apprentice mechanic $25,000 in damages under the Canadian Human Rights Act after it concluded his bosses racially discriminated against him when they terminated his apprenticeship at CFB Halifax. Christian Reeves was employed by the Department of National Defense from late 2009 until July 2015. He was fired for multiple alleged reasons, including poor performance. Reeves grieved his termination earlier this year in his grievance. Even that right there, I'm just pausing. I do recommend the term grievance not be used. This is a Black female reporter, but they do have editors for all of these. But I do recommend not using that word grievance. It is it is consistent. It is almost predictable when you read these type of reports anywhere in the world, apparently, that a Black person reporting some form of mistreatment, it will not be reports, accuses, alleges. That word grievance will be in there. And I've said before that gives a connotation of this is someone who is just complaining, being kind of a child, hurt feelings. Anyway, grievance. Well, okay. In his grievance, Reeves alleged he was the victim of harassment and discrimination in the workplace based on race and that he was treated differently than his coworkers. Reeves was born in Liberia in 1995. He, along with his family, moved to Canada to escape civil war. Earlier this year, the Federal Public Sector Labor Relations and Employment Board heard that Reeves' co-workers were forced to make up stories about him to get him in trouble, and that one military supervisor was overheard using nigger in the workplace. Co-workers were forced to make up stories about him to get him in trouble. Unjust networking, right? Continuing, Reeves' apprenticeship consisted of four learning modules known as blocks. At the end, there was a red seal exam, which allows a journeyman to work in any province, in Canada. After Reeves failed four out of seven courses in the summer of 2014, he was given another chance and placed on action plan and successfully completed Block D. After that, he took the real seal exam and failed, terminating his employment after the action plan was successful and after he had achieved Block D, only because he had failed the Red Seal exam, shows an attitude towards the griever that is simply unexplainable. The only remaining explanation is pure and simple racial prejudice, panel member Mary Claire Perrault wrote in the June 24 decision. the employer's attitude that the griever, they just keep using it, could not succeed as a mechanic, as repeated by a number of witnesses, was racist. There it is, finally. From the evidence I heard, it seemed to me the griever was not given equal opportunity to succeed. Some on the management side seemed determined, could almost say dedicated, to put an end to his probation. Reeves could not be reached for comment. An email Chain presented at the hearing showed a quality assurance inspector had reported that he overheard one of the military supervisors using nigger. The inspector took offense, finding it disrespectful for the three blacks or colored people working here in the shop. He added in a further email that he had relatives of black descent. The decision said the supervisor was told not to say the N-word again. Co-workers coerced to write up Reeves. Neil Harnish, a vehicle mechanic in the heavy equipment shop, told the hearing a warrant officer had asked him to write up Reeves. The decision said Harnish, was in the hiring process for the permanent supervisor job at the time. He was told that if he was unwilling to say negative things about the griever, that's the black male, Mr. Reeves, he would no longer be part of the competition. The ruling said he was told to write down whatever the griever was not doing right. Under pressure, Harnish wrote, Reeves did not have the knowledge and enthusiasm to be a mechanic. I would not want him as a mechanic in my shop. I said I'm not going to read the whole thing, so I'm going to stop there. At the hearing, Harnish said he regretted what he did. In 2006, Reeves was the only black male accepted into Nova Scotia Community College's two-year heavy-duty mechanic program. In November 2009, he was offered an indeterminate appointment with D&D as a vehicle technician apprentice with an annual salary of $52,000. I will stop there because you can continue, but unjust networking. Forcing another employee, allegedly, to lie and just make up whatever you can on the nigger. Anything the nigger is doing wrong, write that down. Didn't want to laugh. What did I just say? They said he wasn't enthusiastic. He doesn't want to laugh and joke with. Put that down. Didn't want to laugh and joke with us. Anything else you can make up. Pants were wrinkled. Put that down. Uniform untidy. Pants were wrinkled. That's, yeah, gotta let this nigger go. Can't be a mechanic in our shop. Come in here with your pants wrinkled and no enthusiasm. Emails. We talk about that on a consistent basis. It seems like that was a part of being helpful. From Mr. Reeves, the black male victim, they said that, of white supremacy in this case. Emails and documentation, it is so critical. You have electronic timestamps with email. Then, I mean, it's exact. There's no argument about exactly what was said to whom. Mr. Fuller has talked about, even if you ask a question, especially if you ask questions and no response is provided, that is a response. That's great. To be presented for documentation, that you ask questions about what's correct, what's incorrect, and got no response at all. Bravo. But emails, super, super important. Nigger, that should be an easy one. Everybody should have a code. I'm anxious, excited to hear codification around, you know, how to perform, what to do, pregnancy in the workplace. But hopefully everybody, that should be an easy one in terms of how you respond, deal with someone saying nigger in the workplace. Grand to have emails, recordings about that. That always makes it extra strong, your case. And looks like we have another example of that old black male privilege. Worldwide black male privilege. Yes. Let's see. The only, I guess I'll get in quickly, the TSA incident that I did play down in South Florida. We have a number of callers down there. I don't know if they've heard. I guess you all can share if you saw that report or not. But with that incident, TSA, they do all that daily groping and molesting of travelers in the name of stopping terrorism. Not going to be another Osama bin Laden. And then they're terrorizing black TSA employees, leaving nooses in the workplace. Hypocrisy, that is key element of racism, white supremacy. And that, in my view, is consistently why when we read books like James Lowen's Sundown Towns, Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear, they'll call O.J. Simpson a terrorist. They'll call Bill Cosby a terrorist. They will not call the whites who work at TSA and put those nooses up to terrorize those black. They will not refer to that as terrorism. They will not refer to the conduct of whites as terrorism, consistent, flagrant. Even the conducts of the white people who keep black people from having marijuana dispensaries, that was clip number one, even that being a form of economic terrorism, that will not be classified in that manner. The hypocrisy. War on terrorism, the number one form of white supremacy racism, the number one form of terrorism, white supremacy racism. Very important. But yes, if folks in the Florida area heard about your good old TSA operating in South Florida, you can share a word on that one as well. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if we have educators who would like to add to their code how you function in the classroom, that is welcome. If you have code about how your workplace conduct, thought, speech, actions, feelings changed once there was a pregnancy, you began expecting a child, very much looking forward to that. If you have other contributions, folks who dialed in *61, lines should be open.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings. I'll just stay with the two subjects that you talked about for the most part. First, starting off with the Racism and White Supremacy Acts at MIA, Miami International Airport. I heard the story, of course. I heard the story. All of the news outlets, a lot of them anyway, are claiming to not give any attention to the quote unquote perpetrators of crimes. And what they do, they don't want to show, in this case, show the actual artifacts that was utilized, although I did catch it on one channel. But if not, other than that, they do not reveal exactly, I haven't seen anyway, exactly who the two people were. And I have one connection with the TSA workers, a former young black male that I coached on our first state championship team. He's a graduate of Florida A&M. He became a TSA agent, a TSA whatever they call him, agent or whatever. But I haven't heard anything in detail from that other than the obvious that you reported, you know, on it. They really didn't dig deep into any details on it at all so far. Even in my chat groups down here, it hasn't even came up in conversation a whole lot. If at all. With the pregnancy thing, I can only, of course, speak from a perspective as the attempted father. And when my son's mother was pregnant with my offspring, just about the only people that really knew about it was guys who were close to me at the crew that I was working with at that particular time. And as I mentioned before, myself, Mr. Clark, and several other black males, we basically plotted and planned and orchestrated over about maybe 2 years of all of us getting on the same shift and at the same station. And that's about seven people, you know, three on the rescue and four on the fire truck. And the officers on their day off, they call it, everybody has a day off called a CR day, and the replacement person that will replace that particular officer. And for the most part, if it wasn't someone who was directly involved at attempting to eradicate the global system of racist white supremacy and replace it with justice, it was someone who would be acceptable to the idea that would be around us at that time. And it lasted for about 2 years. So, I mean, of course, nobody's pregnant for 2 years. So I can't recall of any type of issue or problem, because not that many people knew about it, except for, like I say, people who were already close to me that we basically operated off duty also. So, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal at all. And she rarely came to the fire station people do come to the fire station and visit because we're there for 24 hours, you know, when we're on, but she rarely came to the fire station other than maybe to bring me something or vice versa. I had something for her, that sort of thing. And just about everybody knew who she was. And like I said before, on who these people were, there was only one white person that worked with us, and he was the officer on the rescue truck. So, and he basically kind of like, other than going on calls, he would go back to his room and that sort of thing. And rarely, you know, we had any conflict with him from that standpoint. But that's basically what it was with that particular situation in my experiences. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. That is interesting that them, I guess the mother of your child, not making a lot of appearances on the job, so that way people are not seeing her to be nosy about your business. I guess that might be one aspect of codification folks can think about if you're going to have friends, family members, trying to minimize them visiting your job so that, you know, that's not oh, who is this? So they can come up and be nosy and get direct information that way. And then just limiting that information in terms of sharing. If you want to keep this under wraps and not have everybody in your work area questioning you about, you know, due dates and all of that, nothing to say. Keep it, you know, keep your mouth closed, no sharing, no pictures and that sort of thing in the workplace. And there you go.
You said something that alludes to what I should reveal. A couple of years before, about 3 or 4 years before, when we first met, I met her at the fire station. She visited the fire station looking for directions. So she actually met there. We actually met there for the first time. And all of the same people that I mentioned were working there, working at this fire. We're talking about six or seven black males who, basically, and out of that six or seven, I would say at least five of us spent a great deal of time with one another when we weren't working, doing things that we thought that would assist or directly confront the global system of racism and white supremacy. So it kind of like, you know, was, you know, not really a problem, I would say.
Well, let me ask this, because you did share that seems like a really unique situation in so many respects. You've talked about the kind of camaraderie that you had with some of the other victims that you worked with, and then you all kind of being very strategic and having, you know, a plan years in advance to say, hey, maybe we can all work together. We can run, you know, to go about making that happen. I mean, that is codification, the essence of codification, mm-hmm. right there. But if it had not mm-hmm. been that, if this had just been, if you were in that fire station and let's say there were two or three other black people, non-white people, who were not codified in that same sort of manner, that you all were not looking to do things in a constructive manner to deal with racism and the Opa-locka 3 and all that. They just, you know, victims of racism who were a little bit more confused, let's say, not interested, not focused on solving the problem, just here to do my job. We'll take, for example, the gentleman that you mentioned who came in with the gorilla suit. We'll mention, you know, someone like that, maybe a little less qualified, but still a victim of racism. So would you have shared with him like, oh, man, you know, I'm expecting might have an offspring. Would you have shared, or would you have, you know, just been codified and I'm not going to share?
No, because even before any type of interest on my part to attempt to be codified, I wasn't that much of a talkative person with my personal life anyway. And I definitely would not. We were talking about a relationship, and what you brought up was a good scenario. But what I'm talking about is a relationship of trust, so to speak. And basically we still, I'm talking about, that was back, my son was born in 1996. And with his mom, we met in right the day after Hurricane Andrew. I think it was in 1993. I'm trying to think, something like that. I mean, we knew a lot about each other's private life because we were over at each other's home in meetings. We were putting on different projects in and around Miami-Dade County. And you know, the event is one thing, but planning for it. And I know you understand that because you've involved yourself with different things over the years, you know, that I've witnessed myself. So I know it when I see it. And it takes a great deal of planning, and you're working together. So you do know something about the other. I can recall when Mr. Clark and his wife first met, and they've been married now for about 25, 30 years almost. You know, I can remember when they first met, you know, that sort of thing. And all of and his daughter, you know, when she was born, that sort of thing. So, you know, because we spend so much time with one another. But no, to answer your question, with anybody outside of that type of relationship, they wouldn't know anything about it, or it would be so little, it wouldn't be talked about that much. Now, every now and then, people that know me from a coach and also with my son, you know, he played sports and that sort of thing, and he was around me when I was coaching, it would be some people who would ask about him. You know, how is he doing, quote unquote, that sort of thing. But no, I never had that particular problem because it the things that were I considered to be private in that way, I didn't really dispel to people who was not, even if they was a non-white black person, if they weren't involved in the things that I thought was important and to be involved in, then they probably would not have that particular intel of me. They probably wouldn't. Unless they went about their means of finding out themselves. And I never known about it because it never was brought up to me. Hopefully I answered your question.
Yes, sir. Much obliged.
All righty.
That is something to consider in the workplace. Just, you know, if you're expecting a child, male or female, that if you say, well, I don't want to share with everyone in the workplace, maybe there are one or two non-white people that I'm okay with, or maybe I'll just share it with the non-white coworkers, my non-white coworkers. All right. But, you know, if they are not codified, it's very likely that they may end up sharing that information, even indirectly. It could be in a lot of different ways. Like, you know, I mean, it could be you tell them and they know, maybe they know the due date. So maybe they go on social media and they just, you know, congratulations, retired firefighter. Hope the little guy comes out safe. It could just be something like that. And they are friends with some of the white coworkers because they're not codified. So they're friends on social media or whatever with some of their your white coworkers. They can find out that way. That's what I mean. If they're not codified and you share that information, that's why if you want to keep something to yourself, not sharing at all unless you know, hey, this non-white person or these non-white people, we have a rapport. I trust them that they're not going to share this information. They're going to be solid to make sure that this does not become something where there ends up being a, you know, impromptu baby shower or surprise office party congratulating me on being a mom or a father or some craziness like that. And, you know, the white person who can't stand me says that she has baked a cake for me. And has, I mean, woo, it can get wonky. I mean, it can get really, really bad with those pregnancy things. That's why I said I'm so ashamed. Haven't brought this up before because there's so much to consider. Like, I mean, like I said, if you think white people ask you a lot of questions anyway, be a female and come in there in like late trimester two and see how many questions you get.
You mentioned something significant that was not very prevalent back in the mid 1990s, that some of the technology, I didn't even have a phone. You know, the only phones that I was still only, my only means of communicating with people on that I had personally was a land phone, and didn't have the first time I ever had a beeper. It was my son's mom who gave me the beeper to alert me on when it was time to take her to the hospital. And I didn't even know how it worked. I never forget. I was coaching. It was on my day off when I was out. Now, I wasn't coaching, but I was at the high school because it was off season. It was off season from football season. It was April. And the beeper was going off, and I didn't even recognize it because I wasn't used to having one. And one of the kids that I coached said, "Coach, hey, coach, your beeper's going off." And that was her telling me it's time for me to come pick her up to take her to the hospital, you know, that sort of thing. So I understand what you're saying, that they would, with the technology, a lot of people would misuse the technology. White people who are practicing racism and white supremacy would use it in a negative means also from that standpoint, and even some, you know, confused black people. But fortunately, it wasn't as the technology anyway. I mean, you still had a phone and people would do all kinds of things no matter what time of the years it is, but it wasn't as much technology to misuse in that light back during the mid 90s. Thankful for that. You know, because yeah, you're making some good points on what could have happened. Yeah.
Context of white supremacy. Lots to consider for that one in terms of the workplace. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Educators, if you have further codification on how you function in the classroom, that would be grand. Certainly, attempted counter-racist parents, how did you change up your workplace code? during the pregnancy and or subsequently if it changed permanently. And or, as I said, if you, you know, can kind of look back and think, oh, man, these are some of the things that pop up, and having the understanding that I do now, this is what I would do. This is what I would recommend. That would be appreciated if you are an attempted parent. Cannot be a spectator today. Let's see, I'll read one of the reports the folks wrote in, and then we'll check in other folks who dialed in. This one, Kizzy's cousin. Here's this week's trifling and tacky reflection from a plantation I previously worked on. We often hear reports from callers on the mistreatment of Black women, on the mistreatment Black women receive from envious, racist females. I have also been re-listening to the Crystal Tyler broadcast, Cowbell, which are a must for non-white women who need clarity on the pathology of these race soldiers. You are not going mad. The first broadcast is, for me, the most revealing, and it reminded me of a racist female I used to report to. She was turning 50 and very insecure, although I believe she'd been this way her whole life. We were on our way to a meeting and walking to the venue. We were side by side, but I could see her hobbling out of the corner of my eye. I was laughing in my head because she looked ridiculous. She had brought herself a new pair of boots with a very low heel, but much higher than what she was used to. I thought it was odd because when we first started working together, she told me she couldn't wear high heels because she had bad feet. I had not asked for this information. As we walked to the meeting, she decided to tell me that her husband had taken her out for her birthday, and she decided to wear an even higher pair of shoes. Apparently, her husband told her she looked like a fool and asked her why she had bought them. She told him it was because I wear high heels. I told her not to wear them again, as she was embarrassing him. She had no shame in telling me this story. Well, I think we have heard a few of white females, Black females specifically, calling in, much obliged, Kizzy's cousin, but Black females specifically calling in, writing in to share about, at minimum, peculiar behavior from white women in a work environment. I think Red in Nevada had one about lipstick. I think Emmy had a story, even though this was a classroom setting, that's, you know, same thing, workplace. But it was a white woman instructor about her clothing. You know, Emmy is all about self-care, exercise, eating correctly. And so same thing. It could have been, you know, Emmy writing about the white woman in the classroom situation. But I think it is important to be mindful when that is your workplace situation, to be mindful of that sort of thing. And I think I've said before, I'm not a female, said that many times already this evening. But I do recommend we're not in the workplace to wear our finest, our coolest clothing. I've recommended, hey, I would get the same thing and just wear that repeatedly for males and females, because clothing and all, just as a victim of white supremacy, racists already focus a lot of attention on us. So many of our callers have talked about being under surveillance. I would not want my wardrobe to be a part of that. And I just, so many non-white people have talked about this. Feeling that they've gotten some sort of comments from either having a nice vehicle, quote unquote, or too nice of a vehicle, or nice clothing, or anything. Your figure is nice, any of that sort of thing, where, hey, I am not going to act like I am trying to come here and flaunt anything, because I'm not. I'm just trying to get things done. not to mention all of the sexual attention, but certainly this can be a big one as well. Racist, insecure white women and or white males in the workplace. Mm. And the no shame in sharing, that's that's one to ponder on as well. Anywho, *61, if folks have thoughts, comments they would like to share. Again, if you are an attempted counter-racist parent, no spectating in terms of how things changed for you on the job, if you knew you had to alter certain behaviors, conduct for the workplace once you were expecting a child. Again, if you were not informed during this time, reflect back. What would you change? I think that is super critical information. Let's see. Folks are spectating while folks get ponder, see if they have things they'd like to share. I'll get in another report for this week. Let's see. We actually got two from Kizzy's cousin this week. Second one, she writes, you mentioned how difficult it can be sticking to a healthy diet at work. The team I am in rotate who will chair each team meeting. The person chairing organizes the agenda, etc., and also buys or bakes the snacks. I will pause right there just because I've said pretty resolutely, I would not eat any baked goods. This would be one. It would probably end up just having to be a unilateral decision, meaning I don't care who it is. If it's Kizzy's cousin, Kizzy, anybody else, white person, non-white person, I'm just not going to eat anything because my recommendation would be for all the potluck stuff to avoid that. I'm vegan, so I could come up with a lot of reasons, but I mean, peanut allergy, I'm gluten-free, I'm doing the keto diet, whatever. Make up whatever you need to, but system of racism, white supremacy, how much trust do I have in these individuals to eat what it is they're serving? Even if they're non-white, how much trust do I have to eat whatever's being served? So for like many, many reasons, it would just be unilateral. I'm not eating any of this. And that way, if it's I'm not eating it regardless of what day it is, who's in charge of the meeting, whatever they concocted at home, that way it can't be, oh, you're being picky because you ate Kate's muffins. I'm good on all of that. That would be reputation. Same way I said before about the not gossiping, I would get a reputation for not eating any of the baked goods at the meetings. If they brought in something that was sealed and it wasn't donuts or of something of that nature, maybe I would think about it, but I would probably pass on everything. Just get a reputation for not eating anything. If I'm the one that's in charge, whatever. Let's bring in, you know, whatever minimal it is so we can snack something that is not donuts and move forward with the day. Okay, continuing. I had agreed to chair and decided to go the healthy route. Love it. Buying only fruit, which I should add is more expensive than junk food. There's usually so much food left over to say to last a few days. This was no exception. However, I still received racist backlash from the team. There was racist whispering. Then a race soldier male decided to go out and buy cakes and biscuits as he was so offended by the healthy food. I am amazed. Like, wow. Let me give the sentence over. Then a race soldier male decided to go out and buy cakes and biscuits as he was so offended by the healthy food, which I paid for out of my own pocket. I ignored him and rarely chair these meetings, so there's limited opportunity for this type of terrorism. I am stunned. Like, there's so much focus beyond the states. This is like, I hear this throughout the world. There's so much focus, particularly in what they call Western countries, on obesity related health problems, and, you know, let's try to do better and eating more fresh fruits and vegetables. That's such, you know, a prominent issue to have that sort of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you brought in fruit. I'm going out to get cakes like right now. Like, wow. That is a new one. But I do say, you know, we should not be surprised. Even attempting to bring in fresh produce, I might be met with racism. But that does seem like a bit much to bring in food. You paid for it. And they to find this so repulsive that they go out and immediately buy alternative unhealthy snacks to satisfy their hunger. Like, wow. Number two. Okay, I think I got that one. Yes, got number two. All I can say with the food thing, as I said, I would have a code. I would bring in my own victuals, and I would get a reputation for eating healthy on the job and not just eating because they will. We talked about this. I've talked about this, especially of late in the workplace. They'll have so many of those days, like the donut day and Slurpee day and pizza day and nonsense food day. I don't participate in any of that. Like, if you have water day, maybe I'll come by and get some water. But unless it's that, I'm good. And to get a reputation for that, because they'll just rope you into all of that nonsense. That is not one that I was expecting, that if you try to bring in, you know, fresh fruits, that they'll can become hostile. But it is the system of racism, white supremacy, and, you know, hostility abounds. Incidentally, I'm reminded, Gavin De Becker, The Gift of Fear. We are reading that book on the book club. We are more than halfway through. We did our fifth segment yesterday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. He mentioned a lot about OJ, but the book talks a lot about workplace racism. I'm surprised. I mean, I have seen it listed as feminist literature, which I can grasp, but it also could easily be listed as a workplace resource. It has a lot of information about workplace violence, because that's the main focus of the book, is trying to correctly identify potentially violent, harmful people, situations, and how to neutralize them as best you can. And I said last week, planned ignoring, that was one suggestion that he gave. We talked about that a lot on workplace racism. I give out that suggestion almost weekly sometimes. He talked about, I think I mentioned it last week, he talked about weapons. He mentioned that again this week in the book, in terms of taking that seriously. Someone who brings firearms, weapons to work, someone who talks about weapons, jokes about weapons and or violence, excuse me, in the workplace. He talked about all of that as these are things to take seriously, that these are actions that are inappropriate for a workplace setting. Same thing that I've said, it's not professional. It does not promote safety, which is what he said is he's all about. He said specifically he's not about justice, he's about safety. But it does not promote safety in the workplace. And this is a potential predictor of someone who might be willing to commit violence with said firearm or whatever they mention. That's a big part of what he talked about, that there are logical things, predictors that may indicate certain behaviors. In this case, we're talking about violence. That is one. And we've had a number of listeners who have talked about white males predominantly talking about guns in the workplace, having guns and ammo type magazines, literature in the workplace. And I've recommended, consider. We had a caller who died, I think it was 2 weeks ago. She said her daughter, young daughter, was interning at a facility and a white male was doing this. And I said, I would report that. And I said, I would, Fred, this was before I got to that section of Gavin De Becker's book, but I would report it as, you know, is this conducive to a safe, productive work environment? I feel unsafe. Our company is not related to firearms, so I don't think this is the type of thing that's helpful or appropriate to be discussed in our work environment. What do you think? Another question. But that was the type of way that I suggested framing it, and Mr. De Becker talks about that quite a bit in the text. I think I said before, perhaps you could reference his book in going in to talk about some of these matters, but I would not minimize that. Take that seriously. Any sort of mention of guns, firearms, selling firearms, we had that one too. Any of that, take that super serious system of white supremacy. Other folks, dialed in, *61. If you have comments, questions to share, proceed. folks are still speculating. Oh, caller in Florida. Greetings, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I hadn't heard of the TSA incident story. I thought that was very interesting, though. Was that like a recent one from like just this week, Gus, or was it, what was the date of that?
Yes, sir. That was from this week. The report that I used specifically, I think that was within the last 3 days, I believe.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, that was very interesting. I have quite a bit of incident reports I'd like to share. My first two is, I think it's Sony Artificial Kindness and Courtesy. After the conversation I had with the clerk. The first one was when I took off a week at the end of June, and I forgot to share this one because once I came back, I was being told by a white female coworker how everyone was almost in tears, apparently, because someone with my first name is two people with we share names, me and a white male. He works upstairs, right? So apparently he was in a motorcycle accident and he had to get part of his leg severed off. And I guess they thought this was me. So when I came back, it was a portion of the morning where this was being shared with me. And it was like, wow, does he drive motorcycles? I don't think so. And it was just having a conversation about that. One of the officers says, no, it's not him. It's not him. It's the other one or whatever. So it was going around saying, thank goodness it wasn't you. But I just thought it was a lot of tackiness in that. My next one is I had an emergency and it was like on a Friday morning a couple weeks ago. And I arrived a bit late to work or whatever. And I agree, I definitely want to discourage coming in late and having a whole bunch of tardies, and which I'm pretty good at being on time. But when I get there, the coworkers were saying that, oh my goodness, thank God you arrived, and we were almost about to do a wellness check. So I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know. So, and the black female supervisor was saying, yeah, she was about to call in and check on you in the next few minutes or whatever. But I'm like, they never really reacted to me like that. So I'm like, yeah, this I just categorized that under phony kindness, I guess. My third one is, earlier this week, the white female was making a comment to black female coworker saying that she, because I guess she's in the theater and stuff like that, acting, which makes her, I think, intensely deceptive. So she says, hey, you know, this is my costume. You know, I took some overalls and I made them into overall shorts or whatever. And so two or three minutes later, she's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to be playing this character. And then she says, it's just so saddening how Mark Twain was so racist. So now I'm not saying nothing, right? So the other person didn't know who that was. And so she's saying, you know, yeah, Huckleberry Finn, there was a character called N. Jim. This is how she said it. So, you know, the other black female, she's like, oh, wow, really? I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So, says it, you know, and yeah, I understandably was written in the 1960s. And she is sounding very studious. And this gives strength to Gus when you say white people are not ignorant about racism. That's extremely true. So this person is very younger than the black female. So she's basically just saying this out of nowhere. I guess she probably thought that I had known that, but I didn't give any response because she wasn't speaking to me. My fourth one is the black female that she was speaking to on Tuesday. She says, I was almost going to be late, and people are making compliments about her hairstyle. It was in a natural form or whatever. And the white female says, oh, wow, and it looks like you got your makeup on, too, because the day prior to that, she didn't wear the makeup. So white woman is complimenting her makeup. And the black female says, yeah, well, I did that because I had to feel better about myself. And the white woman says, oh, no, don't say that. So she made comments about her image, her self-image. My next one is another white woman came in and she was upset about the black male janitor, right? He's refusing food items. And this kind of, I know you kind of touched on this point. And he was like, oh no, I'm good. I'm good to go. Like, I don't want anything. Like, don't offer me anything, basically. So they're upset about this. And they're saying, maybe we can put down signatures as a petition or something to compliment him to his employer, to his supervisor. And the white woman is saying, it's just so frustrating. He won't let us feed him now. He won't let us feed him. And he cleaned off the entire kitchen counter. He's just very good at what he does. And she named the female, right, that she said was dark skinned and had pointy ears. She says she wants to take him home. Now, if anybody listening, that sounds like he's either talking about a baby or a pet. She wants to take him home. And it also has a sexual connotation to it, too. So, they were talking about contacting, I guess, the person's supervisor. And if they were to ask me about that, I would flat out refuse to sign anything. And it's just non-constructive. He's doing his job correctly. So why try to bother him? But I'm thinking that was indirectly targeting me because I'm a black male and I refuse to participate in their potlucks. My next one is there was a customer that came in earlier today, and he was getting his passport picture taken. It was him and his, I guess, significant other. And he asked the female, the white woman who was taking the picture, he was like, can you do something about this double chin, right? I guess people have their, their insecurities or whatever about their weight or where their face is presented on a picture. Because it lasts for 10 years. You can't get nothing else. You can't get another one until another 10 years. So she says, I think the same thing about myself. We're just trying to do what we can. So this guy, he says, because, I got a lot of chins. I got more chins than a Chinese phone book. I had my head turned, so I don't know what her facial expression was, but she kind of got quiet. She didn't really say anything, but it sounded like she was giggling, though. That was one. And my next one is, there was a white woman, all right, but the way it started out, it was an email that went out about on Thursday, yesterday, talking about a woman who was cursing out a whole lot of the staff, yelling at people, being very, very belligerent and very hostile to the employees. And they said this person was talking to people in the administration area, and it was so bad that they had to hang up on her, and she's been threatening to sue a whole list of people. And this person, she's one of the top people, the warden, actually, the female, sent this email out saying that, hey, you know, you must be on the watch out for the person. And she can be very angry, and you don't have to tolerate talking to her. You can just hang up the phone or whatever. So this person is threatening to sue the sheriff, the county sheriff, the top people in the office, et cetera. So they was calling this person Miss Linda, all right? And deception and racism is practiced because they only gave the first name, person's first name, and it was incorrectly spelled. Now, this is a deliberate, in my opinion, because the next day, I used logic, and out of everybody in both buildings, I was the only person to think of this idea. So I typed out a response email to the supervisor. First it went, is there a photograph of this individual? But then I pressed backspace. I canceled that. I didn't want to ask it that way. I said, can a photo be provided of this person? See, because they could read that and say, yeah, it is, but I'm not going to put one out there, because I'm thinking that this person sounds very dangerous. So I would like to see what this person looks like. And so we can have some kind of an image or reference to go on. So it took a while for the supervisor to respond, and it said inquiring. And then the next email was a white person that was higher up over her saying, oh, it's going to be one out shortly. And then the top person comes out with two emails detailing, it was one titled confrontational customer, and saying that Linda, I forgot what her last name was. She's very aggressive. She's been threatening law enforcement. And so they reveal more in context the sinister nature of this person. And they showed a picture. And before the picture came out, people was trying to assert that this was a black female. And I kind of had heard earlier in the week that it was a white woman doing it. So the mugshot came out. It appeared to be a white female racist suspect. So it showed the mugshot, and beneath it, it showed that she had been banned from University of Florida, the hospitals, hotels, and threatened law enforcement on more than one occasion, saying that, you know, I hope you get killed in the line of duty, to one, and then said that to another deputy officer, that if you were to come after me, I'm going to effing kill you. But if I hadn't asked that logical question, this white person would have never been revealed to us. And the whole office was pretty much silent, because in my opinion, I'm thinking that they were still trying to protect her, even though she's this extremely dangerous. But that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
PhD study in white supremacy racism at the Florida courthouse. Let's see. I'll start with the last one. Great distinction with regards to requesting a photo, as opposed to just asking, you know, is there a photo, but can a photo be provided? And see what they say. And with that one, I'm trying to think, because this is the courthouse. Like, I'm thinking, the courthouse is a place where sometimes they, you know, have wanted posters and that sort of thing. Like, I think the courthouse, they know how to deal with individuals who might be criminal, might be potentially dangerous, so that these folks can be properly identified and dealt with appropriately. If this had been a black perpetrator, danger, threat to all, you know, want to make sure that we're safe, do you think they would have handled it any differently?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because there's a black male that comes in,
every now and then, and he is accompanied with an officer. Okay, so I asked a question to a coworker who, because the black female was saying that was a good idea, said thank you, and the white supervisor said great idea, but before she didn't say it was a great idea, but until the more powerful white people approved the question, because she said in the email, see blank suggestion below. You know, she showed me the email of her sending it to the person above her. Then when it all got approved, and they sent the information out immediately after. But yeah, there's a black male who comes in there, and he's accompanied with an officer, and he's very polite. But this person is threatening somebody, and your black employee has to send out a question. These people are very smart. I know they put that together, because I just came in the office and I was talking about issues relating to racism. So they said, okay, hey, we got to jump on it. I think they had planned not to send that out because this is a white person.
Hmm. That is substantial, because, I mean, this is safety, just talking about Gavin DeBecker. Now, this person, that's one of the things he said yesterday specifically, that looking at a person's behavior, do they have a history of violent behaviors, encounters with enforcement officials and that sort of thing? Oh, she's threatened law enforcement. Oh, yeah, that's a big check. Bing. Oh, yeah, this is definitely a dangerous person that we want to take seriously. All precautions in this day and age. We can't get a pic. She doesn't have a selfie. You don't have an arrest photo that, you know, we could promptly send out to identify this woman if she's that much of a problem. I mean, that's, I say substantial because I try to point out examples where racists value white supremacy, racism, even over other white people, even over other white lives sometimes. In this instance, I mean, wow, if she's threatened enforcement officials, these are armed servants, public servants. You don't have a gun at the courthouse. I mean, I know there are some armed folks there, but I don't think you have a gun. I don't think the warden has a gun. I've never heard that before. If someone is this dangerous, like, man, let's Johnny on the spot, man. I want her. Get her. So she has an enforcement official as soon as she comes in. Like, man, what are the protocols? And let's be quick about it. I shouldn't have to ask, you know, for a photograph. That right there, if you don't want to, you want to even be hesitant about, oh, man, we got to identify one of ours. Man, wish it was a Negro. Like, man, come on. Let's see, going down the list here. The Chins always appreciate a racist joke here at the Cows. A few times that whites, and that's when you can't be ignorant about racism, white supremacy, and make a joke like that. And even think in the context, and I guess for added, the context, if I heard it correctly, this was to get a passport photo. This was not, you know, standing in line at McDonald's. This was not, you know, waiting to get donuts. While we wait at work on donut day, this is at the courthouse for a passport photo. This is supposed to be serious government document, I thought. You know, you go to travel. This is serious. Getting my picture. This is the time I want to make a racist joke. And I try to remember things in context. Now, we got one person. I don't know if this was the person who giggled, but we got one person at the courthouse, Trump supporter. That's my guy. Four more years. Could have been her. I don't know. This is what you got at the courthouse, where I'm pretty safe. I feel like I can make, you know, a racist joke right here at the courthouse and no problem. This is not going to make my wait longer. You told us how sometimes they can be kind of nasty. If it's a non-white person, if they come up and don't have exact change or don't understand the process that you got to go, they can get on out of here. Get your paperwork and get on out of here and get back. I can come in and make a racist joke and, all right, let's get it together. And yes, we'll see if we can do something about your chins. Can't be ignorant about racism either way. Let's see. And I think they do have a protocol at the courthouse. That's one where somebody comes in and makes a racist joke. I think you talked about it before, because we had the caller who dialed in and it was Black and Decker Pecker Wrecker. And that came up. What happens if a customer comes to the courthouse and they make a racist joke? And he says, you don't have to deal with all that. She didn't say that. She didn't go through the protocol. Sir, we do not tolerate that sort of conduct here. You will behave yourself where, you know, you'll have to leave. You won't get a passport photo. She didn't do that. She giggled. Let's see. The feeding, I just mentioned that. That's so important. Anytime that white people get really upset about something that should be trivial, shouldn't be a big deal. It's not like, you know, and I think you said it was the janitor. You say it was the bailiff. If I heard that correctly, it wasn't the bailiff. It wasn't a judge. It wasn't an officer or a secretary. I think somebody on the custodial staff. Not that, you know, that's a problem. I know some janitors who get treated better than I do on many days. I'm just saying, why are we concerned about what the custodial staff is eating? I mean, is he starving? Does he look like he can't hold the mop bucket correctly? I mean, what's the problem? If he said he's good, he's good. No, he's not good. And furthermore, we need to get a petition. What? A petition? Are you serious? We got to take up company time at the courthouse again. We're not lollygagging. We are on court time, taxpayer dollars. And we need to get a petition to make the custodial staff make them take our food. That would just further solidify my mind. I am not going to eat anything that is served, offered. What did he say? I'm good. I'm good, too. I'm good, too. We're all good. I'm on a diet. I got to watch a peanut allergy. I would just run them down. Peanut allergies, lactose intolerant, keto, gallstones. I can't eat. I can't do that either. I'm fasting. Yep. Doing water fast for right now. Thank you. Maybe next time around. But that's just absurd. And I mean, when I see non-white people who are struggling and have all kinds of problems, and white people don't go out and petition to solve their problems. He's not even coming in and saying, can I get an ear of corn? Do you have a spare can? So he didn't even ask for anything. I'm chilling. I'm good. Oh, no. He never takes this as a problem. This has got to be recognized. And that's important. If you are also good and rejecting the food, if this is, you know, we got an epidemic, the Negroes are not eating anything. If we can crack the janitor, maybe we'll get him. If we get the janitor to come in and get a slice of pie or, you know, whatever it is, I'd be trying to win over more of the black people. We are not eating anything. I don't care what they bring in. It can be whatever. My favorite food is wrapped in gold. You can keep the gold. I'm good. It looks delicious. I'm sure it's great. Have at it. Give my portion to someone who will enjoy it. I'm great. Just even the fact that they focus that much attention on it. Did you poison this? That's the way that I would be thinking, Mike. My suspicion would go up even more because that's so irregular, just in terms of demanding that you eat something. If you're really concerned about the custodial, let's get him a raise. How about that? I'm sure, as opposed to biscuits and cakes or whatever it is, let's get him a raise. I'm sure he would take that. I'm sure he would be better than good. He would be great if we could get him a raise. Can we do that? No, extra vacation days. Anything else we could do for him? I will petition for that. Raise, extra vacation time, longer lunch break. Anything else that we can do to help him out? Let's see. The leg severed. I processed both of those. The them thinking, or I guess pseudo happy that your leg was not severed. And then when you were tardy and they were talking about they were going to do a wellness check and all the rest of it, I processed those together for whatever reason. It just seemed like the same sort of kind of tacky fake kindness, which was talked about in Gavin DeBecker's The Gift of Fear as well, where people are trying to charm you or make it seem like they are, you know, really sincerely concerned about your well-being. And that those type of situations, you come in a few minutes late, And, oh my gosh, are you all right? We didn't know if something had happened. We were about to. I would be thinking in my mind, these are the same people writing it down. Negra showed up at 9:10, 10 minutes late. Make sure that's done. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. So glad you came in. Uh-huh. Your car. Okay. 9:10 was late on today. It's Wednesday. That's what I'd be thinking. Like, these will be the same. Did you see that? Okay. You guys just wanted to make sure that you put that in the file that he was late when we come up for raise, that he was 10 minutes late today. That's the sort of thing I'd be thinking. And remember, these are the same people that set my water on the floor. Like, if you're really super concerned, like, just make sure that my food beverages don't end up on the floor. If they could stay where I place them in the refrigerator unmolested, that would be grand. You don't have to go through all the dramatics. Oh, I'm so glad your leg wasn't severed. We were almost in. What are you talking about? Like, come on. And I've seen a lot of, that's why I mentioned with the pregnancy thing, like, if you want to talk about antics, 9 months of antics, or if they find out at the very beginning or wherever they find out in the process. But that's what it could be, you know, for the whole, for months, weeks of that sort of fake concern. Oh, when are you going for your next checkup? And, oh, I'm just so concerned. Please. Being prepared. I think the main thing is not being fooled, because I think many times, at least I can speak for myself, more confused victim of racism. I might have thought, oh, wow, they, you know, really are concerned about me. I was a few seconds late and they're all in a tizzy, like, wow, I'm really a part of the team. The main thing is to not be fooled by the tackiness, to recognize it for what it is, and to remember who you are dealing with. Racists can be nice when they want to. Mr. Fuller even talks about that in the code book. At times, they can be nice. Gavin DeBecker talks about that. At times, perpetrators can be very charming. That is to get you to lower your defenses, keep you confused about their real motives. Nobody does that better than racist man, racist woman, racist child. Let's see. Did I get them? I think I got all my. Being on time, important. Absolutely. Always encourage that, because everybody will probably have an incident at least once somewhere along the way where something, you know, wacky does happen. But if your general is, I am there 20 minutes ahead of time, that one time something happens, it's much easier to deal with that, as opposed to if it's a regular thing where you're having difficulties being there on time. Yeah. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Wealth of information from the courthouse, as usual. Wow. PhD in studying what it means to be classified as white, and great illustrations of why it would just be unilateral. I would have a reputation for not munching on anything that I didn't bring myself to the workplace. And it would be broad. That's why I said, even if black people cook something, if there's a black person that you're cool with and they made something, I would wait. I wouldn't make that a public affair. And they would probably know my code, so they can come and bring you something aside. And, you know, you don't have to go through all that publicly. But I mean, it would just be, you don't even have to ask. No, thank you. I'm sure it's yummy. I'm sure it's delicious. No, thank you. The number again, 605-313-51. Oh, I did forget one. Huckleberry Finn, the little race soldier. And those type of things, I guess I should have said, those types of things, I always feel like I have the same suspicion when they're dangling food out, like, oh, come on, we got watermelon for you. I know it's your favorite. We got you. Come on. Get the same type of thing when they come in and start talking about Huckleberry Finn is racist, or I think Donald Trump is racist, or anything like that. I have nothing to say. That is a great time. And that's that, because I feel like they're baiting you. They could be recording that, whether they're literally using a recorder or whether they're just, oh, yeah, I'm going to be alert and see if we can, you know, get him into some sort of discussion and be talking about it. What does this have to do with our job at the courthouse? I totally forget. Did we have a homework assignment on Huckleberry Finn? I totally missed that. I have nothing to say. You can comment and chat, blah, blah, blah. Other people are like, really? That's what it sounds like? Wow. I have nothing to say, and I find it super suspicious that you would even bring that up in my area. That's what I'd be thinking to myself. And she didn't even have correct information. That book was published in the 1800s, not the night. I was thinking that immediately, like, get your information correct if you're going to come in here and try and, you know, probe and get some sort of response. I feel like they do that sort of thing all the time with President Trump or sometimes it'll be anything, something controversial like that to try and get your opinion, doing recon, as I call it, in a workplace setting. Yes, now I'm good. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks should check in with your employer policy and procedure, really. Check the manual to see if they have anything about racist jokes specifically. Or commentary that is not professional, becoming of a workplace environment, or if that has been discussed specifically, I would know the protocol in case you're in a situation like what we just heard. You deal customer service, or you're dealing with people where they would have an opportunity to break into a racist joke like that, so that you already know the procedure. And if this should happen, where it's one of your coworkers who hears this, you can observe. They hear a racist joke, that sort of thing happens. Do they follow what the protocol is, or do they snicker with the joke? What is it? They give the racist joke and, you know, whatever the punchline for that joke. How many niggas does it take to screw in a light bulb? Whatever. Oh, third. Do they laugh or do they do the protocol? We do not. That is not acceptable, ma'am, sir. We do not tolerate that sort of conduct here. And if you're going to behave that way, I'm not going to be able to help you. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in. Again, if we have attempted parents, you have offspring, you cannot be a spectator. Once you found out you're expecting a child, how did that change your counter-racist code on the job? If you were not informed about white supremacy racism at that time, reflecting back on that period now, what would you have done differently? What would you change, knowing what you now understand about white supremacy racism? Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Hello, may I be heard?
Greetings, Irie.
Salutations, and hi to everybody on the line. I was calling to say a couple other things, but now that you mentioned parenthood, I absolutely was confused and confounded when I had my son. I was also in the military. I was in the Marines, and it was especially racist and especially stressful on me. And looking back, I probably would have opted to actually be discharged from the military because of the racism I experienced, the aggression from a black female for whatever reason she had of a high rank. I could have lost my son on a couple of occasions, and then when I had my son, I could have died because they basically wanted to rush his delivery so I could return to work sooner. And they prematurely broke my water, the military hospital where I had them. And because of that, I developed an infection of the amniotic fluid, and the placenta would not detach on its own without giving too much of that. And then afterward, because I was stationed back home in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina, or right before, they were especially racist toward me, and I shared this a while back, but, you know, I'm just thinking about it again. They were especially racist toward me because I had my son and my other family with us when we were in a hotel. I was able to host them with me instead of them having to be in shelters. I would have got out. I don't know what it's like to be a parent in the military as a white person. Maybe they have an easier time. Maybe they don't. I don't know. I just know my experience was horrendous, and I still have a lot of anxiety, if not PTSD, from my experiences. Whew. So there's that. I wanted to share on, that kind of rattled me, excuse me, thinking a little. Well, until I can remember what I was also calling to share about. Oh, I know. Okay. I got it. Bear with me. Thanks. I wanted to ask any of the people that listen in or people that maybe haven't participated, if they are attorneys that know specific laws or things that we could know when we encounter our workplace, like workplace racism situations, what legally those things are termed, so we also can write down and note accordingly in the event there needs to be an escalation, you know, what these things are legally called, because I just understand that you have to, once a situation has escalated and you want to make a report or you want to seek some type of damages, et cetera, it's good to know kind of what that is already that you're going to assert in legal terms. And, I mean, even if they just write in and say, hey, I heard somebody mention blah, 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 that's called da-da-da. And, I'm not even looking for, like, the U.S., you know, the code or whatever on it. But, you know, it just would be more informative, because part of codification, I believe, for non-white people is learning the codification of white people, which includes legalese or law. And the last thing I wanted to say is thank you to the retired firefighter for his service. I had a traumatic experience younger where I saw someone in person. I was very young, and the person was burned. Apparently had some very severe burns. So I can't, from there, I was like, I'm not, fire me, no. I'm not standing close to a barbecue grill, like even, and I'm not trying to be, you know, funny or anything. I don't like fire, and I absolutely applaud you. Thank you for your service. You deserve a moment in Black history for being a firefighter and running into the danger. And I will mute my line. Thank you all. Thank you, Gus.
Much obliged, Irie. Thank you for sharing, and especially such a personal share. That's what I mean. That's why I think it's so important to discuss, because that's such a critical period, maybe one of the most important periods in a person's life, when they have offspring. And just, I mean, wow, that just your experience could have been a fatal experience with, you know, what you described. In addition to all of the hostility and ill treatment that you reported, even leading up to the labor trauma of that experience. So that's why I say it's so much to think about. That's why I'm ashamed that I hadn't brought this up before. I'm not a female. I'm not a parent. But something seriously to consider, just for your safety, to try to minimize stress as best you can during this period, to just try to think it through so that you can already know what you're going to be dealing with in your work environment. If you already know that you're around scandalous folks, oof, like even plotting that out, how can I minimize this as best I can? I would reiterate, claim your space in terms of the touching and whatever else it is, claiming your space in terms of if you don't need to reveal information, whatever information you don't want to share, that's that. This is not, you know, a group event, me having a child. So, you know, feel free to set that boundary wherever you think is appropriate. If we have folks with legal information that is would be appreciated. I do think that one aspect of white supremacy racism, at least with regards to employment, frequently that will be up to the local jurisdiction. Generally, that'll be a state issue. And so some of those laws vary greatly sometimes state to state, which is important to know, you know, where you are and what your rights are going to be in that area and things to be mindful of. But certainly folks who have information, we hear different. That's why we try to prevent when we present about the using recording devices, which state you are has a big impact on what's legal, what's not legal. That's just one example. But if folks have information, please share. If you have specific legal information that, you know, we should be mindful of, or if you hear specific reports, you think that there's specific legal information that would be pertinent, share. You can email untiljustice@gmail.com and I can read it on the broadcast. Let's see. Other folks, let's see. I think Draftomania, did you have commentary, questions? You should be with us.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Gus. I'd like to say hello to the callers and all of the listeners. I wanted to share a report that happened to me this week. Saturday, when I went to work, I'm learning to listen to my instincts more and more. I'm getting much better at that skill. I'm learning to trust myself much more. I guess due to some Black self-respect and some self-esteem, it must be building because I am learning to trust myself. And so when I went to work, my supervisor, he told me, he texted me, he told me to go down to another floor that another co-worker does. The co-worker that's in process right before my shift told me to go around and check, like basically check behind her to see what wasn't done. And text him what wasn't done. I automatically felt very uncomfortable and not at ease about that. So I did my check-in. Actually, I didn't really find anything that wasn't, that was too dramatic or major. So I texted back that everything was good and everything that wasn't done, I told him, which was really minimal things. So and then I can remember recalling things to myself.
Your line is breaking up a bit. Your line is breaking up a bit.
Can you hear me?
Give us another sentence. Let's see.
Can you hear me?
Still not crystal. It kind of faded out towards the end, like on the now part, it kind of faded out.
Okay. I'm not sure. Is that bad?
Nope, still breaking up a little bit. It was good for the first portion, and then it just started not being as clear, where it just kind of fades out a little bit. Yikes, got even worse now. Let's see. If you want to, maybe we can hang up and just call back in. I'm looking right at the switchboard, so I'll see you when you dial back in and see if that makes an improvement, perhaps.
Okay, I'll put back on my cell phone.
Okay. I'll look out for you on the switchboard. The number again.
Okey-doke.
Yes, ma'am. 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. press star 61 if you would like to participate. Again, parents, if you have, how did you adjust your counter racism code while you were expecting, pregnant? If it permanently changed or if it was just for that time period, what changes did you make? And again, if you didn't have this information at that time, no problem. Just looking back, what sort of things would you change? Looking back at that experience and saying, oh, okay, now that I have this information, this is what I would do. This is what I not do. This is what I would not do. These are things that I recognize as concerns at minimum, looking back at that experience through a counter-racist lens. Let's see. I'm looking out for Draptomania will nab her when she dials back in. The portion that I did hear when she was speaking with us about being asked to kind of check up on somebody and report back their errors, I have to double check to see if that was a non-white person, but that does seem to be very common in the system of racism, white supremacy, and sometimes even be encouraged to come back and tell the flaws, errors of another employee, particularly a non-white employee, to be mindful about that sort of assignment. That also can be a great time. How can we help this person? If this person is making errors, is, you know, should we intervene to help out, or what is behind all of this? I think Mr. Edward Williams talks about a similar incident in his book, as mentioned last week on the program, How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, White Supremacy. Let's see. I think Draptomania is with us. So let's see if we can get the full rundown. Are you with us, Draptomania?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, that is an improvement. Okie dokie. So let's get okay. It again.
Okay. What I was saying is that I went to work Saturday, and did you get that part? Like when I was telling you about the supervisor told me to do the check, to check behind a coworker. Did you get that part?
Yes, I was just trying to confirm, was that a non-white coworker or a white coworker that you were supposed to do this check on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody I work with is non-white. Okay. Everybody's non-white, black. Yeah. Supervisors on down. Yeah. So he told me to work, go, you know, do a check to see what wasn't, you know, and that was the key word, what wasn't done. And when I did the, you know, I did check, and I, like I said, everything that I saw was basically done except a couple of non-major things. But it just, you know, the way it was presented, it was like he was wanted me to, I felt like he wanted me to snitch and tell him what she didn't do. So I didn't feel comfortable with that. I felt very uncomfortable with that situation. And I did text him back, and I told him what wasn't done, but it wasn't anything major, you know what I mean? I did the specific of telling him what wasn't done. I guess he was expecting a whole bunch of things or what have you. But like I said, my instincts were telling me, like, this it didn't feel right. I was feeling as if I felt like I was being used to snitch to get somebody in trouble. And for nefarious reasons and purposes. So after I did what I needed to do with that, like I said, I didn't feel comfortable with doing it. And I knew that there had to be something that wasn't something that was going to be positive that came out of it, be it something that was just saying what I was going to say. You know, you never know in those situations. You don't know if that information is just true. Test me to see what I was going to say about him, because that you have to always be you have to look at situations from all scopes, like you said. You know, you have to see, you don't necessarily know if this individual is just using you to see what you're going to say, but you know what I mean, or if it's really that you're getting me to check behind a person. So I really don't know what a person with this individual's true motive really can be. So, but nevertheless, I didn't feel comfortable doing it. But, like, I did report that, you know, what was done. I mean, and what wasn't done, I told him everything was more manly, looks good. So, I think it was Tuesday night. So I heard her talking, and I don't know if this was something that was, like I said, I don't put anything past people because I know how, you know, people, they have been seeing so much, how people kind of do some, I guess, networking and not even victims of white supremacy, because we are victims, we take on characteristics and that should be expected in a system of white supremacy. I'm pretty much careful because before, you know, I was codified, I used to, you know, fall for some of these tricks and I've learned from my mistakes. So she started talking about how he and that thing to Monday morning when she came back to work after this report that I was supposed to report back to him about what wasn't done, she was saying that overheard her talking to one of the another coworker, not really a coworker, but somebody that was in another part of the university. And she was saying how she got called to the office and was told, and she's very unprofessional, loud, they're just like very I would say street, you know, act very, very in a professional setting, even though there isn't anybody else there, it's still not it's still not the way you should act at a job, like talking loud in person and, you know, very boisterous and loud, you know. So she was talking loud and she was talking about what happened and how he called her to the office and he told her. So what I did, I asked him, I asked, even though I tried to stay out of danger, I stayed in the question line because I felt if that had something to do with me, because as I stated, I felt uncomfortable by him asking me those questions. So she was telling me that what happened was he ended up saying that she wasn't doing her job. She got called in the office to have a meeting with him, and he told her that the bathrooms and all the stuff that she was supposed to have been doing wasn't done. Now, like I said, now mind you, I was the one that did check. So I don't know, like, and I had the text, like, with me and him texting, and I guess he just added whatever he wanted to add. Now, this is just what she's saying, so I have no way of verifying if this happened or not. So it was like everything that I said that she did do, he was saying that she didn't do. And he was saying that she's not doing her job and, you know, this and that and the other, and that's what came of that situation. So like, it just kind of invalidated to me that I was basically being used. And I guess, you know, she was saying that, you know, she's not sure if he's trying to get her out of there or whatever. I don't know. But that was one situation that how I just felt like I was being used by, and this is not the first time that he has done this, has tried to get me to police other people what they're doing. And he does this, I know for a fact that he uses other coworkers to do this to other, you know, I'm quite sure he's gotten people to do it to me also. So this is just the type of environment that I'm working with, and I'm glad that I am aware that this type of behavior is going on and that I'm not allowing myself to be used by this individual, because like I said, the same thing that he would have me do to somebody else, same thing that he'll have somebody else do to me. And that information, it's like information gathering, and then they'll use it against you. So I don't trust situations or people like that that, you know, want you to find out things about other people. Like I said, to me, that's a form of snitching for personal gain. You know, I can see, like, if there is a situation where, you know, I need to address a issue, fine, and that's, you know, when it's necessary for me to do that, I have no problem doing that. But to do it for somebody else because they have an ulterior motive, I feel uncomfortable doing that. And then there was another incident with another coworker. There was an incident where I had told one of the other coworkers that one of the labs was closed, and this coworker that I was telling you about before that was trying to keep a lot of the gossip up and trying to get, you know, gossip about other coworkers to me. What he did, he tried to take the situation and he tried to come to me and gossip and try to make it seem like what I did was incorrect, and tried to say that these other individuals were going to trying to make a big deal out of what I tried to say, that I said something mean to one of the parents. All this stuff was all made up. It was all fabricated. It was all lies. He also tried to say that the girl that who was the building manager was saying something to maybe possibly get me in trouble with the director or what have you. And then he also tried to, I told him exactly what happened, he then tried to turn around and then try to put somebody else in a situation to try to make it seem like this individual came to him. Came to him and said something like, I wasn't doing my job or I did something wrong. But what I ended up doing, because as the situation was going on, I've been smart to cover myself by going to my manager, my supervisor, and telling them whatever situations that come up, I make sure I go to him because I know how this individual is also. So just to cover CYA, I covered my butt and I went to him and I told him about the situation. He was like, fine. It wasn't really no problem because it, you know, was posted all throughout the building when that office is closed. So me telling them that the office, department was closed at that time, it wasn't really an issue. But this individual tried to make it like, you know, you were just saying how somebody tries to make it seem like they're being nice to you or they're helping you. I call that, that's like a wolf trying to help the hen. You know what I mean? Or it's like they're not really even trying to help you. All they're doing is just trying to stir trouble up. But they're making it seem as if they're just telling you something because they have your best interest in mind. And you just discussed that and talked about how people do that. And Gavin, Rebecca did also. So I was able to go to my supervisor again and just let him know. I said, if you hear anything else of it, you know, this is what happened, and, you know, so you'll know. It just to cover myself. And, you know, I handled the situation, I think, as professional as I can. That's basically all I wanted to share about that workplace racism, because I would call it workplace racism, because I think it's all of these behaviors are a result of white supremacy racism, post-traumatic stress syndrome. No post-traumatic slave syndrome. We still, a lot of victims still have their mindset and the behaviors. And I could say that it wasn't that long ago that I had that mind, you know, some of those mindsets. So I think the most blame, as you always say, or is, the root cause of all of this is white supremacy racism. And that's my report for the week.
Much obliged, Draftomania. I think that's one of the crucial aspects, whether it's a white person or a non-white person, if they are in, they have at least more local power than you do in the workplace context, where they have authority to say, well, hey, can you go and check on this person and report back all of their errors? Mistakes, where they can make that sort of request of you, they could probably get that information themselves. Like if they want to fire the person, and particularly if it's with that sort of bias, where it's not open-ended, just, you know, go and supervise such and such, let me know how she's doing, if we need to make any training or what have you, what she's doing well, what she's not doing well. Oh, okay, right on. Open-ended, no problem. This is not that. This is, oh yeah, just let me know how this person is messing up. Thank you. if they already, you know, have it out that they want to fire this person or this person, they already got their judgment, their assessment of this person's skills there. They don't need you to go out and say anything. I think, as you stated, the person was generally all right, had a few errors, nothing too major. Apparently, that wasn't sufficient. They went and said the exact opposite. You're messing up this and you're messing up that. They don't need your input on that. That's the other thing to keep in mind with these sort of situations. I think it can be a good opportunity to ask questions, especially if you're feeling uncomfortable about it, to just, you know, ask questions. Even as I said, Mr. Williams' question about, you know, how we got to help this person out if they have some deficiencies. Give some training, that can be a good one. You know, is this supposed to be trying to help this person out with what we're doing? But I think a lot of, or I won't say a lot of times, but I think this is not uncommon where non-white people are tasked with going around to give some sort of poor assessment of another non-white employee, and then you can be implicated in, oh yeah, I had to let that person go. We had to fire him, or, you know, whatever it is. It was a group thing. We all talked about it, and, you know, everybody, Draftomania too, thought you were terrible. Like, that seems like those type of situations are more frequent than we would like to know. much obliged, Draftomania. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Parents, no slacking. If you have thoughts to add to the dialogue, I guess if the parents are listening to the archive, make sure you drop in an email. If you're listening to the archive and had your motherly, fatherly duties, so you couldn't get the live program to respond to the questions. Other folks who are with us on the line have questions, comments they want to make sure they share. Grant, we should be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what's happened over the last 7 days, catch up on activities, share some counter-racist suggestions, hopefully. dial in. I got confused about my dates. I guess I can give my own workplace racism. I got confused about the dates. We were doing yoga teaching in the park here in Seattle. Supposed to be doing my third date teaching here in the park. I thought it was going to be this coming Monday. It turns out it was this past Monday, which I was not pleased about at all because I am still not 100% recovered, but I am much better today than I was on Monday. Like, wow, I was still laboring pretty hard Monday. So got out there. Things were fine. There were still lots of very enthusiastic non-white children, black children out and happy to do yoga. Was a hoot to work with them again. Same thing. I did have concerns if the recreation officials, the folks from the park, if they would, you know, intrude or cause any problems. I've done it 3 different times now and they've not been an issue at all. I've just been able to go out, teach. The weather's been great. has been awesome. No problems at all. It's been all coordinated by non-white people. We haven't had any problems or scheduling issues working together. So has been bravo all the way around. Hopefully, I think there are at least 2 to 3 more weeks. There was an option I might have another teaching opportunity. We'll have to see if that happens. I'll make sure to let people know in advance. You all can come out and practice. Folks who are close in the area can come out and practice. But I would definitely say it was worthwhile. I was a little apprehensive about doing this for, you know, several reasons. I wasn't sure if the fun of being able to just go out and practice in the sun, and particularly working with black children, I wasn't sure if the white park officials would somehow find a way to kind of mess that up. I wasn't even sure if it would be a lot of non-white people coming out because I hadn't been to the park where we were doing this before. I hadn't been to that park before, so I didn't know if we would just be inundated with whites to come and do yoga, but none of that has been the case. Has been just grand the whole time thus far. And out of all the staff that the group that I'm a part of, small group that I'm a part of non-white instructors who signed up to do this, so far one date got canceled and one person had unforeseen travel plans. I have been the only one of the group to do any teaching, and we are more than halfway through with the program. Wacky. I'll update, but try to take advantage. You have opportunities if you are what they call black entrepreneur, self-employed. Try to take advantage different ways where you can go out, market your skills, especially if you can do constructive work with other non-white people. Try to take advantage if the opportunities are there and try to maximize those opportunities. I remember I did say I asked a lot of questions to try to make sure minimize confusion. To try to make it so that it could be an enjoyable experience. Thus far, it has been checks on all accounts. Any other comments, questions, suggestions? Folks want to make sure they share. I will assume folks are all satisfied. Grand, we should be here.
Hey, Gus.
Oh, caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Oh, yes. I just remembered there were two more reports I wanted to add, if I could, really quick. The first one is about the cell phone again. And the two coworkers, they were basically talking about the black female getting in trouble possibly if she doesn't put the phone away. So she was like, oh, well, if I get over trouble for something like that, then there's going to be a problem because they don't say anything to them on the other side, because context is she was taking selfies of herself and she sits in front of the hallway window. So her head is faced away from someone who could be walking behind her. So, you know, uncodified, I would say. And she was holding the phone up, and one of the top white people was walking by, and he turned his head looking at her. And I just kind of just, like, overheard it and saw it because I had a customer. So I could see she was holding the phone up doing a selfie. So, I can foresee that they're going to definitely try and use that against her. And the last one is, I shared the incident about the black children coming in for, I guess, the summer tour through the courthouse. And I expected that I was going to be able to do a comparison, that what would be the reaction from this black supervisor when she said that they need to take them to sit in a juvenile hearing to see what the consequences are of their actions. So a group of white children comes in and she's like, oh, well, you know, I'm glad to see this is a more happy crowd or whatever. I didn't hear anything about they need to go to the courtroom. And then a group of Asian children came in later on that day and I still didn't see the response that the black children got. So I wanted to share that one. I thought that was quite interesting. And that's all I have. Thank you. Can I be heard?
Yellow mellow. Brown stick around. Black get back. White is right, Dr. Welsing said. Yes, sir. Retired firefighter. We can hear you as well.
Yes, I would just add on to the call from Florida on how significant that is, because I sometimes volunteer with young people in Mr. Clark's DCS program. And that is the same sentiment that comes from white people and non-white people who are confused, especially with the nature of the employment that the caller from Florida is involved in. They, in other words, they don't consider that the black children would be interested in being a judge, being an attorney, being in his position. They only are there to be scared into not being that person that with the handcuffs behind their back while they are in shackles, while they're standing up in front of quote unquote the man type of thing. And that is, you know, and a lot of times, especially with a non-white person, they're not even fully aware that they are actually placing black children in that type of position. You know, but the white people are, and the white people are conscious about it, you know, about their distinction with it. And for the most part, they'll be quiet. It'd be the black person with, in a lot of cases, with that type of sentiments. I've noticed that a lot. That's it.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I do think that is important to have that sort of sentiment articulated even by other non-white people. The contamination of white supremacy is massive, cannot be understated. But I think that's an important observation from the caller at the courthouse, the comments that were made last week about those black children. We got to show them that there are consequences for their actions. That's how it was stated, as though they're little criminals in waiting. And then when white children or even non-black, non-white children make it to the courthouse, they don't need a lesson in responsibility. They don't need to be informed about consequences for misconduct, and that they look happier. What that mean? Really? They look happier? The Negroes last week didn't look happy. Looked like they were getting away with no consequences. They weren't even happy about that. The phone activity, I reckon I will only say, I guess, no selfies in the workplace. That would probably be pretty good counter-racist code, no selfies in the workplace. If you're going to be using your phone for photographs, hopefully it is to record, document racist conduct, things that will be helpful to you. But that would not surprise me at all. And in my experience, I mean, white people do it up on their cell phones and just devices in general. Sometimes it can be the company device. They do it up. They are on games and pictures and texting, and they are just doing their thing. That's why I say it, Mr. Fuller, when he talks about equal protection under the law and making things a constitutional issue, that's it. It cannot be. Not that I'm saying, you know, we should be doing selfies on the job. Not at all. I'm just saying I see flagrant, like extra flagrant violations of cell phone policy on the job, and have seen it for years. In my view, white people are notorious for that. That's why it's important. I think the caller in the courthouse where he said where before a white woman was on her phone, now she wasn't doing selfies, but she wasn't doing courthouse business either. She was on her phone, and the supervisor person says, I'll just make a different comment because I don't want to reprimand her about the phone. So I'll just come in and just tell everybody good afternoon. And that'll be like our little hidden code to, you know, put the cell phone away so it doesn't look like we're promoting it. Why couldn't that be done for the black female? No, it's got to be a disciplinary issue. And, you know, we're not going to tolerate this. We've got a cell phone policy at the courthouse, and I'm going to get on it right now. Any other comments, questions, folks want to make sure they get in? make sure we didn't miss out any parents. I guess the caller 9192. Did you have commentary? You should be with us as well.
Yes, good evening. Hi, Gus, and the callers and listeners. I am a sometimes listener, usually listen because I'm usually asleep, but just want to chime in. I did send an email to you for some workplace stuff, and I'll call back a little later for a longer report for something that happened. But with the phone incidents, I can confirm that at my workplace, non-blacks are, well, white people are particularly very visible with their phone activities, ringers up really loud, playing all types of like obnoxious phone messages, and ringer tones. However, it seems that the black people typically are the ones that get the admonishment to stay off their phones. So I'm not quite sure about that, but there's one person in my area who has a incredibly long country or pop song that plays every time, but I've never seen her get told to turn her ringer or phone off. So there is a little bit of a double standard with that, I notice, and I always have my response back if I get a question. My phone never rings. But I do have a code as far as what to say back to that, and it hasn't been, I guess, adverse to my effects. We just kind of usually still keep getting the blanket comments, which references the white people versus the black people. And I think that's probably my only response. If you can get to my email, I think I've put a couple incidents in there too.
Oh, wow. We have more emails. Let's see. I'm sorry. I was negligent on a workplace racism email. But I do. What's your response? You said for the phone situation, what's your codified response that you have at the ready?
I typically say, now, is this for everyone? No one is supposed to have their phones out or have their ringers. Is that correct? And when the phone goes off, of course, they don't want to address the white person. So they stay with the blanket statement of, okay, everyone, just keep your phones off. And I've seen no one black anymore get really relegated to have any write-ups or anything about phone discrepancies. So I think they don't really want to speak to the white people, kind of like Thomas was saying. They say like aloud, put your phones away, or, you know, they want to talk to the group, when in actuality the direct response would be for them to go to the white people that are abusing the no phone dictate or whatever.
Love it. I do regularly encourage having questions ready. That can be our best defense in the workplace. Sometimes dealing with whites, period. Being able to ask questions, and especially about policy and procedure. And is this going to be applied to everyone equally, consistently? Or is this just an individual policy for little old me? To the email. Correct. To the email. Great question. Number one, a white coworker returns to work after calling off sick. Shortly after her arrival, another white coworker asks if she's feeling better, to which she breaks down in tears. Oh no, the weeping white woman returns. Breaks down in tears and replies, not really, because she had to put her cat down. Other white coworkers immediately surround her, giving hugs and condolences. She went on to say that since the kids were gone, it's been just she, her husband, and the cats for 12 years. I found it extremely ironic that the show of emotions over a 12-year-old cat and that she didn't recall overhearing any such conversations around the death of 12-year-old Tamir Rice, which happened in another area of the state in 2014. Later in the week, the same coworker complains loudly after the supervisor denies her request for bereavement and states that we employees ought to be able to use it for pet deaths. I looked up but remained silent during all these conversations. Number two, a confused victim came by the workstation and the talk turned to music, which of course turned to talk of dancing. Inevitably, the white women began talking of twerking, which in my observations and opinion is generally an attempt to coerce someone black to begin performing a jig for their collective amusement. The victim entertained them to some extent and at one point called out to me to verify the name of a dance move she was performing as that of the Cabbage Patch. I simply nodded in mild disappointment as the show went on and continued to work. As best you can, that is very, very common in the workplace where non-white people become entertainment for whites. As best we can, trying to avoid that. If you have other victims there, you know, sometimes it happens. You just end up being a part of something that was not planned. But this is very common, very tacky. And I have seen where whites, it seems like they kind of manipulate and enjoy these situations, taking advantage of confused victims. Number three, in the company lunchroom, I sat my containers on the sink next to me while I washed my hands. A white female employee came up to stand to the right of me in front of my lunch container. She proceeded to move them further down the counter and to her right as she places her lunch containers in their place. I abruptly shut off the water, moving to collect my items, and asked her to please not touch my things. She's on her cell phone and moves to the sink, not responding to me directly, although looking at me. As she turns on the faucet after collecting my things, I take the opportunity to sweep her containers to the other side of the counter before walking off. This gets her attention, and she loudly complains. Number four. Waiting at the elevator, a white woman walks past me and positions herself in front of me to board ahead of me. I calmly ask, "Did I just see you walk in front of me, waiting on the elevator as though I wasn't in line to board?" Question. Embarrassed, she says she didn't see me. I reply, "Well, that's interesting, because you actually walked around me to get in front of me. If you didn't see me, you'd probably have walked into me as you weren't paying attention. Also, I noticed you didn't stand in front of the person in front of me, but rather alongside them." More embarrassment and mumbling as everyone turns to look at her. We board the elevator to the muffled snickers of onlookers. I will try to call in the future to recall another incident, which is too long to type. Many of those. Much obliged with the, I guess, the last incident with the cell phone. I think we've heard a number of folks who've talked about just general tackiness with the elevator, something that seems really trivial. The elevator, exiting the building sometime, just getting out the door, it will turn into a race to see if they can beat you getting to the elevator door, or beat you getting out of the exit door, or something like that. Or I'm going to walk in front of you, jump in front of you before we board the elevator. Sometimes the best thing to do, I'm not going to fight you for this position or anything like that. I could just ask, "Did you see me standing here before you, you know, bullied your way to the front of the line?" Just ask a question. Sometimes that right there can be enough to stop that sort of behavior, especially other whites see that, like, "Oh, wow, this Negro has, you know, enough self-respect to even question us when we come up and abuse and mistreat her. Like, wow, I've got to watch that one. Always encourage Black self-respect. Bravo, calling her out, asking the question. And with the dishes as well, because that's the same type of thing. Pretending conveniently they don't see you when they can throw your property to the side or push you to the side altogether to board an elevator or exit a building or whatever it's going to be. Having the Black self-respect to call out that behavior immediately as being incorrect. That, you know, this is unacceptable to treat my property this way or to treat me this way. Much of, I guess we got a twofer. She called in and wrote in. I was feeling bad at first, like, oh man, I thought I checked a few times for emails, but this email came in more recently. This was after the program went live, and even more recently, like within the last few minutes. So yeah, I don't feel as bad. But much obliged, ma'am, for dialing in and sharing. And yes, hopefully you'll be able to dial back in and give us, I guess, maybe the longer incident that might take up a bit more time. Yes. We shall see. Any other folks have comments, questions that they wanted to make sure they got in before we conclude? All right. We'll assume folks are satisfied. Thanks for everyone dialing in, the folks who emailed. I hope the information was worthy of your Friday evening. Again, we'll be here tomorrow, the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what has gone down the last 7 days. I'll probably take one more second to ask about parents and their code, workplace code, that is, during pregnancy. And if people share, I'll make sure to eat or read. If they email, I'll make sure to read those comments next week, because I do think that that is super important. And if folks need time to share, think, hear the archives, we'll address it again. Should have addressed it before now. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Let's do everything we can to preserve our brain computers so that we can come up with solutions to the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver. Let's do everything possible to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. In addition to being buckled up, not being on the cell phone, don't want to be taking selfies while we are at work or if we are in the driver's seat. Again, just minimal things, small things that we can handle to try to minimize problems. Let's do that. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.